You're listening to Cat Tales. Hi, and welcome to this edition of Cat Tales. Today I'm joined by blues drummer extraordinaire and veteran of the music business for over 50 years, Tally Icepack Jackson. Now, Tally has played and recorded with absolutely everyone who's anyone, from Bob Dylan and Bonnie Raitt to Bob Marley and Bette Midler. And on his new CD is joined by no less than 9 Gold Grammy and Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. He is just a pure, world-class, multi-talented musician. This is The One with Tally Icepack Jackson. Hello, Tally. Nice to speak to you again.
Nice to speak to you.
And there you are in Long Island, New York.
Yes. And I must say I'm honored to be on this show. I've seen some of the people you've had. Ian Hunter,
yes.
Dave Hill, Clay Bowling for Soup, Jake Burns. This is, wow.
Oh, thank you so much for that, Tally. That's, and it's an absolute pleasure having you on the show. It really is. Because I know that you've got an absolutely massive history in the music business, and you've been around, is it 53 years?
Yes.
Now, you must tell me, how on earth do you sustain a career for that long? Because that's no mean feat, is it?
It's not easy, and it's harder than I thought it would be, but I keep on it.
Well, you've got to, haven't you?
Yeah.
So when you started out in the business all those years ago, did you expect to have the kind of people under your belt that you've worked with, some of these absolutely fabulous names from Ella Fitzgerald, the Monkees, Bob Dylan, Bonnie Raitt? The list goes on with you, doesn't it?
I never dreamed that that would happen, ever.
So you started off when you were about 8, didn't you?
13. 12 or 13.
Wow. So when did your, let's call it your big break come? How did you get into the business?
I worked with Herb Abramson, who was one of the original founders of Atlantic Records, and he was building his second recording studio, A1 Sound, and we were trading recording time for helping him build a studio. And then we got hired, some of us got hired to do commercials at an off Madison Avenue advertising agency, and that turned into a band. And the first thing we did at the studios was on one of the Monkees albums.
So what did you actually do for them? You were involved in a commercial, were you?
No, we did the backup track and singing, and then they came in and sang over what the other guys had sung already.
That's incredible. And then did it go from there, Tally? So you've got the Monkees. How did it develop? You've got such a wonderful back catalogue.
Oh, that's tough. We did a bunch of commercials, some soundtracks, and the guy who ran the studio knew everybody. So it was like a revolving door of these legends coming through and just meeting them. And then we got a job as the house band from Max's Kansas City, and we opened 6 nights a week for all the big name acts, all the folk acts, all the rock acts like the Sex Pistols, Bob Marley, every act that I can think of.
Wow. Did that sort of make your head spin at such a, you know, an early age and a young stage in your career? Did it make you think, wow, this is just an incredible business to be in?
Yes, it did, because the place was packed every night, and we'd do a set, and then the name act would come on, and just rubbing elbows with them was great.
Amazing. So over the years then, you've met lots of absolutely legendary people,
right.
And no doubt you're friends with quite a few of them still, and I'm sure a lot of them come through your life and go as well, don't they? But
right.
just looking.
More than once.
They keep coming around like a revolving door.
Yeah.
Because if you look at your latest album, I've been looking through the list. It's almost like a who's who of the business, isn't it? Who's playing with you on your album?
Yes.
So it's called Back to Biz, is it?
It's basically a blues thread through all of the songs, no matter what genre you think they are. The bottom line is there's a blues thread there. And even Cyberstalker, which is about, people being stalked online or texted, which is a big thing these
Isn't
days.
it just? And it still has that blues rift going through it, doesn't it? Because you are the common thread, really, for each of these different tracks, aren't you?
Right.
And of course, you're known for your blues drumming, and so really, you're adding that little feel of your own spin on it, aren't you, throughout each of these different tracks?
Right. And I held everybody accountable for what they played, which definitely helped, from that was the difference from the first CD.
Okay, so when you mean you held them accountable, in what way did you do
Well,
that?
the pros know what to do, like Elliot Randall, the horn players from the Uptown Horns who perform with the Stones, June Millington from Fanny, these people, and Hux Brown, who played in the Harder They Come movie with Jimmy Cliff. These people, you play it once, you play it twice, and the third time they're ready to record.
So
And
be
then the other people, if they would record something and get up and think they were done, and I say, could you, do it the right way this time?
right.
There
I love it.
was one guy, and he rest in peace. He's passed away, but he was a great person, and he played keyboards, piano, and organ. And he was also a common thread through the CD. I say, could play it with feeling this time, and he go, "Excuse me."
Dear, but I guess you must have a sound in your head that you would want them to create, because you've got some tracks that you've written yourself, haven't you? And there's
Right.
some music that's written by other people, but because you're putting this together, I guess you've got a you're hearing something.
Right. Some songs I had to explain, and they came together incredibly well. And then Iggy Pop's former sax player, he's another one, rest in peace, Stephen McKay, put down this unbelievable sax solo on a song called Skid Row Social Club. And it's real film noir, sleazy sax and trumpet by Larry Etkin, but it was enjoyable. And then the songs that I didn't write, the reggae tune has been around for 40 years, and we redid that. And there's a band in Northern California called the Smiling Iguanas, and they sit down every Wednesday and work on tunes.
Right, okay. So there's all sorts of different kinds of, subjects coming through from various different people who are writing
Right.
the music, but at the same time, you have that view of how you want it all to gel together.
Right. And I explained to them what the common thread was, and they knew exactly what to pull out of their hundreds of songs that they've
Yeah.
written. We nailed them both, and then I brought them back and put some unbelievable musicians on top of that, and it worked out fantastic.
That's incredible. I mean, to actually have such an array of wonderful names, some great music, and then
Yes.
it almost feels to me like, everybody's interpreting it in a different way, and it's almost like the basis of jazz when you're really just going with the music and going with the flow.
Right.
It feels like it's got that little bit of free flow with it, which I suppose is the basis of what blues is all about, isn't it?
Right. And jazz.
Yeah.
So this basically had jazz players and blues players, and you're 100% right.
Amazing. And that's what really, it's all about, isn't it, in terms of like true music production. It's almost
Right.
like going back to the basics, isn't it, and getting
Right.
something.
Well, I also did a song called Time Stands Still. And this great ladies singer, Eva Capelli, sang it, and it's almost like a Otis Redding. It's an ode to Otis Redding's backup band. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've got these great names like you've mentioned Elliot Randall there, you've got Rocking Jake, Stephen Mackay, some fabulous people are playing on this album with you.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, how did you actually decide or invite, I guess, certain people to come onto this record with you? How did you choose them? Because you've got so many people probably you've got a you've played with over the time. Did you actually choose different people to play on different tracks?
No, I put them, you plop them down in the control room. Some songs I were not recorded at Icebox Studios, so I have to find a studio, and we recorded it there. But Will Bernard and this other incredible local guitar player named Bosco, I sit them up in the control room, and they have their amp mic'd outside. And I go through the songs, and they said, "Okay, I like this one." And I say, "I think that's it." And he said, "That's come on, you got to have some more songs for me to play on."
Oh, they all want to be part of it more.
Yeah, yeah.
That's wonderful. So the title of the CDs, is it Back to Biz or BK2BIZ? Well, that's a,
B.I.
yeah,
Back.
BIZ in your, yes, of course, in the Americanism there. Where did that come from? Because that's a bit of an unusual title.
Well, the first CD was called Back Square One, BK2 SQ1. And that was my first jump into the digital recording age. Of course, late, but better late than
No,
never.
absolutely.
So I was starting back to square one,
Got
and
you.
then feeling more confident, I named the second one Back to Biz.
Yeah.
More killer players, and like I said, people played, they didn't play and go home. They stayed until it was right.
Right. It sounds like you've got some very high standards going on there, Tally, which I,
Yeah.
if you mentioned there about this being digital. Of course, your career predates digital, doesn't it? And the
Oh,
analog
so
recordings and stuff.
big tape, yeah.
So how does the process differ from your perspective? Is there a difference for you, or is it just about going out there playing your stuff?
And as far as recording, there's a big difference. I mean, you got the tape, and if you don't get it right, and everybody's on. You got two people on one track, one person on another. You can sometimes punch in, depending on the ability of the engineer, punch in and punch out a section and correct something. But basically, you want to get a good feel and get it right on tape, which was much harder to do. And digitally, now you can take one note and move it anywhere in the song or onto another song.
Yeah, you're right. That, and I think, in a way, I don't know how you feel about this, but that makes me feel that sometimes now perhaps they don't, you know, the standard of the initial performance doesn't necessarily have to be there first off compared to like the olden days, as it were.
Right. But you still want to have that good background feel. And I mean, even if somebody messes up on guitar or bass, it can be corrected. So as long as you've got the feel and everybody's happy with, you know, now you can, if you don't like the way the bass player played, you can just add another track and record it another way. Or mix and match, you can take two different guitar solos and put them together.
Do you think it's lost something with the digital age, or do you think it's actually brought benefits? I can see the both sides of the coin myself, but how do you feel about it?
What gets me is people that use synthetic drums who don't know how to program them. And they just hit play on a keyboard, you know, and it sounds like you're playing in a lounge. And, you know, a lot of Stevie Wonder stuff at a certain time was digital sampling, but it sounded like a real set of drums.
From a drummer's perspective, does that lose some of the soul that it's all about?
Well, you've got the new stuff, which is rap and hip hop, and a new style of R&B, which is, you know, all synthetic. It's a digital bass, you know, put in a loop, digital guitar or keyboards, horns.
So if somebody was coming into the music industry now, then, Tally, what would your advice to somebody be?
Get as much recording and go to as many jam sessions as possible. But when you're recording, you can play it back and listen to yourself so you're not overplaying.
Is that a mistake that a lot of drummers play, you know, make, or a lot of players, I guess, of various different
Yes,
instruments
yes,
make?
yes.
And why do you think that is? Is that just the enthusiasm, or are they trying to be the key sound, or what's the motivation, do you think?
Both. Some people just like to plow through songs. Other people, you know, they're just nervous. And you can usually tell when, you know, at jam sessions, when somebody's warming up and they're playing 5,000 notes, you're in trouble.
Yes. You can spot the signs then, I guess, can't you?
It's gonna be a rough ride, you can tell.
You can tell. So looking back over your career then, your wonderful career of all these many years, are there any highlights that really stand out to you that you think, do you know what, that was a particularly great moment in my career?
Working with Mike Bloomfield was unbelievable. We also played the same band that was a house band in Max's Kansas City. After the Montreal Expo 67 closed, for the next 2 summers, we opened for all the original blues people that started the blues in their area, especially on keyboards.
Oh, wow.
The guy found them and brought them up, and we played again 6 days a week, and we would open for them. You know, people like Little Brother Montgomery, Sonny Alanis Flynn, Roosevelt Sykes.
Wow.
You can Google all of them on YouTube, and they were just happy that somebody remembered who they are when they were the creators of the blues in their, like, St. Louis or Memphis, Chicago. And just sitting there and watching and listening to them and and hanging out with him afterwards was an experience I'll never forget.
Oh yeah. That, I mean, that's amazing. I mean, just looking back on the, you know, some of those occasions and some of the people that you've spent time with is just incredible in its own right. But is there anybody that you would particularly want to play with now who maybe you've never played with? Or have you done it all?
No, by no means. Well, it was an honor playing with Elliot Randle then and now, and that's a tough
It's a
one.
toughie. There's so
Yeah,
many good people
yeah.
out there. Or
Jeff Beck, I idolize. Gary Moore.
yeah,
I mean, the
amazing.
list goes on, but every combination makes the sound different.
Yeah, I can imagine. So going forward then, I guess that you know there's still people that you may want to play with, but actually I notice that you're trying to raise money now for a tour bus.
Yes.
Wonderful. So you're looking at trying to go around the States and play. What's your dream?
Around the States and around Canada, and we're trying to find a sponsor who will get us a bus, and we'll put their logo on it. And the statistics say that locally, on a little van, you get 7 million hits in a year. So you're traveling around the U.S. to 150 cities, you do the math, you're getting probably 100 million, I don't even know what that is, of hits.
A lot of exposure, isn't it? So that's
Yes.
a sounds a good
Yeah.
plan for a bit of
Yeah.
advertising
Yeah.
that. And you're nearly halfway there, I understand. You're trying to get $5,000, am I right?
Well, that's part of it, but the total cost would probably be 25 to 30 thousand, which to some companies is a drop in the bucket. If they sponsor, like where you are, they, what do they call them, supercars, or, and they're sponsored by oil companies, spark plug, or Formula One. They've got so many sponsors, some of these teams. That's the kind of sponsorship we're looking for.
That's what you're looking for. Terrific. So, if someone actually wanted to go and buy your new album, Back to Biz, and also donate some money for your fundraising for the new tour bus, where do they actually go then, Tally?
They can do everything through icepackrecords.com, or they can go to my Facebook page, Ice Pack Jackson, and listen to both CDs from there. Or they can purchase a song from CD Baby, Amazon, Deezer. I think they can purchase it through Spotify, which is global too.
Brilliant.
And you've got a lot of European companies that it's distributed to that I don't even know the names of. Last FM, is that?
Yep, Last FM's over here as well.
Yeah.
Terrific. Well, I've listened to the album. It's absolutely wonderful, and I do recommend people to go out there and buy it because it's fabulous. It's got some wonderful playing on it. It's a terrific vibe and everything, and you know, it's something that they must have in their collection. So I do urge people to do that.
Yes, and everybody that participated donated their special vibe to the overall turnout of the CD.
Wonderful. Well, I wish you all the best with it. I really do, and I do hope you get your tour bus up and running soon, and I can't wait to actually come over and hear you play live, which will be absolutely
Yes, that
wonderful.
would be great. Now, step two, if everything falls over, I might travel across the big pond. Who
Oh,
knows?
wonderful. You'd be most welcome, and I'm sure everybody would love to hear you. Well,
Yeah.
thank you so much, Tally. It's been an absolute delight speaking to you. It really has an absolute
Yes.
delight speaking to
Like
you.
I
Thank
said,
you.
I'm honored to even
Oh.
be put on the same list as the people that you've interviewed in the past.
Well, you're up there, Tally. You certainly are, with the company that you've kept and the music career that you've had. So it's been an absolute delight speaking to you. Thank you so much for everything.
Oh, thank you.
You've been listening to Cattails.
To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattails.co.uk.